Welcome everyone to the Westprint Sports Review here on Planet FM. And I have to say, Happy New Year to everyone. It's great to be back in studio. Well, not in the live studio, we're in the pre-record studio, because today we have a very, very special guest. First of all, the show is brought to you by Westprint. Well, they are based at 9 Pereri Street in New Lynn. Their number is 09 827 8501, and their email address is westprint.co.nz. So just a very, very special show today. We have one of the real true legends of New Zealand broadcasting coming on here. So next up we'll have a chat to the great man, Grant Nisbet. Welcome everyone to the Westprint Sports Review, and I have to say this is a real special show because we have a legend. You know, like, we celebrate the athletes and some of the great moments of New Zealand sports, but we tend to forget the people that have brought us these great moments. And this person, he's brought us some fantastic moments when it comes to New Zealand sports. One of the things is that some of the memories of some of the great All Black matches have been covered by him. I'm pleased to have him on the show. He's a real legend, Grant Nisbet. Grant, good morning to you. I should say good morning to you, and I hope you've had a great new year.
G'day, Eamon. Yes, real pleasure to be with you, mate. Yes, it's been a great new year, and obviously COVID has been a real problem over the last 18 months or so. So we've got the fingers crossed that, 2022 will be a lot better.
We certainly hope so, because there's a lot of good things happening in 2023, especially when it comes to sports and New Zealand. Well, we might as well kick it off. Grant Nisbet, you're born in Wellington. You were educated at Rongotai College. You were in the first 15. You had an opportunity to go to Otago University or to join what was then known as the New Zealand Broadcasting Corporation. What was that decision like for you? Because remember, I think a lot of people don't realise this is before broadcasting school started, that you had candidateships and stuff, and that's how you got your foot in the door. So tell us about that first part of your journey, Grant.
Yeah, well, you're right. I was all accepted to go to Otago University and do the physical education course down there. I think sport was a real passion, and I wanted it to pretty much carry on that way through my working life. But I had a neighbour who had an association with Sir Lance Cross, who at the time was the head of the New Zealand Broadcasting Corporation Sports Division. And he knew my neighbour knew how passionate I was about sport. And he said, well, why don't you have a crack at broadcasting, and I can get you an introduction to Sir Lance Cross, and, you know, maybe we can work it through that way. And I was lucky enough to have an interview and be accepted as a cadet, I guess they were called in those days. And so all my aspirations of going to Otago University very quickly went out the window. And I started at the NZBC Sporting Service, as it was called in those days, back on the very last day of 1968. Wow. I remember at the interview, I was never voice tested or anything else. I just had a chat with a bloke who asked me a few questions, obviously determined that I was interested in being a sports broadcaster. And within about a week or so, I was accepted, and away we went.
Well, that's interesting. Of course, with the early days within there, you would have met some great characters who a lot of them went on to be lifetime friends. People like Keith Quinn, Bill McCarthy, Brendan Telfer. But you meet those great characters, and you started off in radio. You covered the boxing at the Montreal Olympics in 1976. You covered cricket on what used to be. And I'm just trying to think of the show now. I did have it before I came here. I think it used to be on the National Network. I remember listening to your commentaries. Sports Roundup. That was correct. God, Grant, I did have it all written down, but somehow I lost it. And then, of course, in 1984, you know, a real great moment for you was your test debut. The All Blacks were playing France in 1984 at Lancaster Park. I remember that because it was the first rugby match I went to. And, of course, you took over because Keith Quinn had very much been there. They'd sort of, without move Keith into a more of an administration role, and of course Brendan Telford covered the tour to England and Scotland. But you got your opportunity. How much support did you get from some of the colleagues like you? You know, it's one thing I've noticed about all of you guys, that you've got a great camaraderie. And what was that feeling like doing your first test?
Yeah, it was a bit daunting, I must say, because I'd never done a television commentary before. I'd done a lot of radio commentary, as you mentioned, on Sports Roundup, etc. And, you know, I'd done some radio rugby commentary when the guy at Athletic Park, Brian Russ, who was a long-serving commentator, he went off and covered an All Black tour, I think, in 1974. So I had an experience of doing radio commentary there. But by the time 1984 came along, I'd never actually had a shot at doing television, and it meant that I had to leave radio, where I'd been previously for 16 years in Broadcasting House in Wellington, and move to Avalon, where part of the TVNZ sports section was in those days. There was two divisions, one in Auckland, one in Wellington. And Keith Quinn was actually my boss when I arrived there, so he was really, really helpful. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, it was a wee bit daunting because there is a big difference between radio and television. And with radio, you're trying to paint a picture, and you're trying to tell people what's happening. Whereas with television, obviously you see it, and it just needs to be enhanced. So, yeah, I remember that game well, and then, of course, it was followed very quickly by a tour to the by the All Blacks to Australia, and on that tour, I think we won one and lost two from memory. It was, you know, it was a days when the All Blacks didn't win every game just because they were the All Blacks. And that's really where it all started.
Yeah, and of course, when you look back at those days, you became pretty much a fixture within our TV folklore. Like you covered the 85 series against England. I believe you also went to Argentina, which was the first time I think we'd actually covered a rugby test in Argentina in 1985, because that tour was brought in because of the cancellation of the South African tour. And looking back at it, some of the people you had as commentators, I remember when you first started that first test, I remember it was 10-9 to the All Blacks. Les Cabora missed about 50,000 drop goals, it felt like. But you had Graham Fawn, you had the legendary Graham Fawn as your sidekick, and you saw some of the moments within New Zealand rugby, like 1986, you saw the birth of the Baby Blacks after the controversial Cavaliers tour, and then you also saw the birth of the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah, look, they were very interesting times in rugby, weren't they, for sure. You're right. I mean, the Cavaliers tour created a lot of controversy, quite clearly. And so the Baby Blacks, that remains one of my highlights, the Baby Blacks winning that game in Christchurch when, I guess, they weren't expected to. But somehow Brian Lahore, who was the coach at the time, managed to put together a team, and they've become very famous because, you know, in a lot of pubs around the place, people say, name me the Baby Blacks, and it's pretty hard to do. But nevertheless, that was a fantastic achievement, that. And then, as you say, 87, the start of the World Cup, and it, very modest beginnings. When you think now to that first game when the All Blacks played Italy, Eden Park, which at the time probably held about 50,000 people, they're only half full. And so people took a wee while to warm to the World Cup. But, you know, we won that first World Cup, of course, and we all know what's happened in the subsequent years. So very interesting times in rugby.
Yeah, and of course, you're not only a rugby commentator. You, one thing I can also say about you, you're an outstanding cricket commentator, and you're involved within the 80s, within Sky, and then in the 80s and early 90s. So you saw the moments of the Hadley 300th wicket. You saw the great players like Martin Crowe, Ian Smith. But then in 1992, New Zealand and Australia had the opportunity to to co-host the Cricket World Cup, and of course it was a great opportunity for TVNZ, and I have to say, I remember this commentary team would be a different commentary team. Like, there was yourself, Peter Williams, Sir Richard Hadley, who, you know, nobody has to go on about his cricket credentials because we all know how great Sir Richard was. Glenn Turner, very analytic, and then you had the studious mind of Peter Sharp, and then you had the dry sense of humour of old John Mystery Morris, and then we had a couple of different people that joined it, and one of them was, of course, Jeffrey Boycott and the very eccentric Henry Blofeld. So looking at this, it must have been a wonderful time to be a commentator, but you must have had some interesting after-match dinners as well too with that team.
Yeah, you're right. There were some real characters, absolutely. And some of those guys you mentioned bring back fond memories. I remember the first time I met Jeff Boycott, I wonder what I'd struck, to be perfectly honest, because we all remember him as a very dour opening batsman who was very hard to get out, but he didn't score any runs. And if he did score any runs, it took him, felt like, a week to get them all. But he was a bit of an eccentric character. He was totally different to the bloke you see out in the batting arena, that's for sure. But he was enjoyable to work with, that is for certain. And some of the local guys you talk about, Glenn Turner, he'd been there, done that, just about done everything it was possible to do in New Zealand cricket. So it was great to work with him. John Mystery Morrison, as you say, a very, very dry humour. And we were lucky enough to be together in that 1992 World Cup, which, of course, finished up in disappointment for New Zealand because we didn't make it to the final. We got very, very close. But when Martin Crowe wasn't available for that semi-final match, it did put us back a wee bit. And we finished up losing the semi-final to Pakistan, who went on to win the title of the Melbourne Cricket Ground. We were actually lucky enough to go to Melbourne Cricket Ground and do commentary of that game against England. And Pakistan were really good on the night, that is for sure. But it brings back some really great memories of working in cricket. And I was lucky enough to go, along with Ian Smith and Sir Richard Hadley, 4 years later to the 1996 World Cup, which was in India and Pakistan. And boy, that was an eye-opener because I'd never been to that part of the world before. And to work with such legends as Richie Beno, Tony Gregg, Greg Chappell, Keith Stackpole, some of these guys that I'd idolised from boyhood almost, and to be able to actually work with them at the 1996 World Cup in India and Pakistan, which in itself presented some real interesting contrast. Pakistan, for instance, you couldn't get a drink, whereas in India, if you went to the right state and applied to the right people, you could have a beer. But really enjoyable times doing cricket, that's for sure.
Yeah, and of course, you look back at it, your time at TVNZ, you had not only that, you went to South Africa in 1995 for South Africa's reintroduction into world rugby at the Rugby World Cup, and that must have been a real special moment for you as well too, Grant.
It was fantastic. I mean, they've been back for a few years, of course, but this was the first World Cup they'd played in. They re-emerged in 1992, of course, when the All Blacks went over there and played a one-off test. And so 1995 was the very first World Cup that they actually had been involved in, and not only involved in, they were the host. And the All Blacks were fantastic at that tournament. They fell over at the last hurdle, we all know that, in that famous final where no tries were scored and Joel Stransky dropped a goal in extra time and we lost the game. But just to be there was great. And one thing that sticks out in my mind was just how humble the South African people were. I don't think they expected to win that final. I think they were just happy to be hosting it and B, being in the final. But it came as a big surprise when they won it. But they were really humble about it, and I thought that was fantastic. And, the aftermath about the Tuesday and all the rest of it, that'll be talked about for years, I suppose. We'll never know. But on the day, they were fantastic, South Africa, and they got their win.
That's fantastic. Wow, we'll just go to a quick break there, Grant. And next up, we're going to talk about your journey from leaving TVNZ to joining Sky. Welcome everyone back to the West Sprint Sports Review. We have the legendary sports broadcaster Grant Nisbet, and of course the second part of the show is that Grant, who had been with Television New Zealand for quite a while, had the opportunity, because the game had changed. The game had gone professional with on the field. Off the field, Sky had been given the rights to cover Super Rugby and the All Blacks. Now, Grant, you know, how did this opportunity come about for you to join Sky? And, of course, you've always said it was probably one of the more no-brainers for you in your professional career.
Yeah, well, I mean, once Sky got the rugby rights, it meant that Television New Zealand obviously couldn't do rugby anymore. And I was fundamentally a rugby commentator, even though I did a lot of cricket. And I had a call. I was actually in Pakistan, believe it or not. I had a call from Kevin Cameron, who in those days was the head of Sky Sport. And he said, we need to chat when you get back. And I had a pretty good idea what he was talking about. And as I say, it was a no-brainer. We had Keith Quinn, and in those days we had John Macbeth and myself, all at TVNZ. And remember, we only did one or two games a week, so there wasn't much going on. But then Sky, when they got the rights, they pledged that they would do all rugby. And, of course, it was the start of Super Rugby, so there was a heck of a lot going on. Plus, we had the domestic rugby and the All Blacks, so there was a lot to do. And as I say, it was a no-brainer when the offer came to join Sky. I left Television New Zealand. I'd been there about 12 years at the time, enjoyed my time, but, you know, things moved on and I had to follow where the rugby went.
And, of course, you know, the opportunity came. Your first test match, your capital, was the All Blacks versus Manu Samoa. I remember for the Scotland test, Sky brought out, Scotland series, Sky brought out Bill McLaren. But you were there for that special game, and I remember this one because it was a it was like a Wellington summer, as we would call it, that was windy, it was rainy, but 1996 probably would have seen the best performance I've ever seen by an All Black team when they defeated the Wallabies 43-6 in what was considered the Tri Nations at that stage. Some of your memories from that, Grant? That All Black performance was brilliant.
Yeah, it was. It was it was incredible when you can consider it was a stinking cold, southerly day in Wellington. And look, I'm a Wellingtonian, so I know what those days are like. And Athletic Park was a very exposed venue. Whoever put it there I don't know when they had first played at Athletic Park, but whoever put it there and made it a north-south ground, I'll never know, because at one end you've got Cook Strait, the other end you've got the Wellington Harbour. I would have thought running it east to west would have been better with the grandstands as the wind block, but whoever made those brave decisions way, way back, I think got it wrong. So it was a shocking old day. But the All Blacks were fantastic. I mean, when you think back to that All Black team, they were very, very good. There's no doubt about that. You know, there's Zan Brooks and the Michael Joneses and those sort of fellas. They were a very, very good All Black team. And the luckless Wallabies, I don't think the All Blacks made a mistake all day. And they simply cashed in and produced one of the best performances I think anyone can remember.
I have to agree with you there, Grant, because, you know, like, I have a look at that. This was the first All Blacks team of the professional era, and I have to say one thing, you know, John Hart in the past has had his detractors, but he was the perfect man to lead us into that professional era. And then, of course, from there, you had a real special moment in New Zealand rugby, and a very special moment. I know my good mate Bernie McCaha was beside you in the commentary box that day in Pretoria in 1996, where the All Blacks won their first Test series in South Africa.
Yeah, that was memorable. In fact, when people ask me about my most memorable game, I generally fall back on that one because, you know, we all know, those of us growing up with, you know, history of New Zealand versus South Africa rugby, how difficult it is to win over there. It was in those days because the fact is that, you know, a number of factors. One was it's pretty hard to play over there. A lot of the games are played on the high veld. And in those days, we didn't have neutral referees, and you talk to All Blacks of the past, and they figure that they didn't get the best of deals out of South African referees. But we'd gone to neutral referees by 1996, and it was a memorable series because it started in Cape Town. Now, this game wasn't really included. It was the last game of the Tri Nations where the All Blacks actually won. And then we came down to this three-test series, and really, the All Blacks won in Durban, but they only just won. Then they had to go. They really had to win in Pretoria because the feeling was that by the time they got to Joburg, they're probably not going to win up there. It's a very, very difficult place to win, even though Pretoria and Joburg are only about 40 or 50 miles apart. Somehow Joburg has always been a tough place to win. So they really had to win and clinch this series in Pretoria. And we all know the drama that unfolded there. And this was in the days before they had a neutral, if you like, on the time clock. The referee was the sole judge of time, and it seemed to go on forever and ever. And we all know the scenes, the All Blacks defending grimly. If the Springboks had scored and the game had been drawn, then it would have all been on in Johannesburg. And of course, the Springboks were always going to be too hard to beat in Johannesburg. So it had to happen. And when it did happen, it was just quite remarkable. I made the fundamental mistake, and I've never done it since, of actually writing some words down and coming out. And when I think back now, and when the final whistle blew and I grabbed the piece of paper and read these words out, it sounds like I'm reading them too. And I've never done it since. I've always said, right, I'll just back myself on big occasions to ad-lib my way through it, not to write some smart words down, because it sounded, when I look back now, it sounded like I'm reading it. So it was a fantastic occasion, that's for sure. And, you know, I think the All Blacks, well, they might have taken their foot off the pedal a wee bit of having won the series there, because when they went to Joburg, they got a bit of a hiding the next week. Had the title or had the history been on the line, maybe it would have been different. But they were just good enough to hang on in Pretoria, and that was the end of that. And we famously had our first win. John Hart did invite the press into the dressing room after the game, but I've never been into an All Black dressing room, although years later I got invited in and I went in. But at that stage I said to myself, I'm not going in there, because an All Black dressing room is the total environment for an All Black, not some hack who just calls the game. So I didn't go in, and I'm pleased I didn't either, because I've always said to myself, that's not where journalists belong, in All Black dressing rooms. I did break that rule a few years later when Steve Hansen absolutely insisted I went in when I did my 300th test match, and they made a nice jersey presentation and all the rest of it. But back in 1996, with the All Blacks winning that series, I decided to stay out of it. But certainly it was a fantastic occasion and a memorable place to be at the time.
Of course, one thing you mentioned about John Hart, and of course, I always believed that he was the right man. And of course, eventually, with retirements of many crucial players like the Fitzpatricks, the Zinzan Brooks, the Frank Bunces, you know, unfortunately, it all didn't go right for poor old John at the 1999 World Cup. But one thing I think he did bring, and I think from a, you know, from a media relations between the media and the All Blacks, because no one really was, the All Blacks were very, very, I would say, quite standoffish with the media. And I think one thing John Hart brought to it was a bit of professionalism, Grant.
Yeah, look, he was very media savvy. There's no doubt about that. Look, I know John Hart pretty well because, like so many others, he has worked with us over the years in commentary, and he was very good at it too. And you know, I've built up a pretty good relationship with John Hart, and I thought he was an outstanding coach. And as you say, things didn't go particularly well in 1999, and we tend to remember the negatives, and we forget the positives in 1996 that you touched on, with that performance in Wellington and also winning that series in South Africa. I thought he was an outstanding coach, and I think he deserves to be remembered as one.
I'd have to agree with you there, Grant, and there's no two ways about it. Of course, then we move on from 1999 to that match in Sydney. They still call it the Test Match of the Century. What a game, the All Blacks versus the Wallabies at Stadium Australia. And people tend to forget, and a lot of this younger generation, this Wallaby side had just come off a winning the World Cup. They were a very, very good side. And I remember watching that Test match, and it was one of the most, you know, enthralling and exciting games I've ever watched.
It was fantastic. And it's certainly up there with games that I remember. There was a massive crowd at the Sydney Olympic Stadium. I'm not sure that was the game where they had 100,000, but it was pretty damn close.
It was great, yep. Yeah, it was.
And remember the game too, we got out to 24-0. I don't think anyone can believe this. And play had been only going about 10 or 12 minutes. Suddenly it's 24-0. We've scored three quick tries. But the Wallabies, as you say, were a good team. They had come off winning the World Cup in 1999, and they actually got it back to 24-all. And it was all on in the second half. And then, of course, the game came down to that last-minute try by Jonah when Tane Randall popped the pass over the top and Jonah went for the corner, and it was just a fitting climax to a brilliant rugby occasion, there's no doubt about that. And rugby was on a real high in Australia at the time. You know, fundamentally Sydney is a league city, we all know that, and they like to poke fun at rugby, but by gee, rugby had taken over as a major sport in those days, and they come and go. As we know, at the moment, Australian rugby's not too flash, but we also know it'll be back at some point. But certainly in those days, with, you know, the Gregans and the Larkhams and the John Eels and all these fellas, it was just fantastic.
That was a fantastic Wallaby side. Well, okay, well, so we'll just go for a bit of a break, and next up we'll talk about the World Cups 2011 to 2015.
I can't see no room for improvement. But when you all over there on your jack jones, you need to let me get behind your backbone. Cause I'm the man for the job, let me work here. I won't waste no time, I make it worth it. 100%, I make it worth it. You got a body to die for, let me work here. Now it's murder in the dance floor. I wanna take this further than the dance floor. I ain't forceful, but I'm still hardcore. You're gonna give me everything I ask for. It's not a long thing, you're the boom thing. Maybe more than a hotel room thing. I'll never know if I just walk past. I really wanna dance, so I guess I'll just pass.
She's no pole. Look at those eyes, it's in her eyes. She's good to go. She can satisfy my mind, body, and
come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me. I see you glance with me, that's why I'm asking, be. So let's party, be. Come and dance with me.
If I'm out on my own, then I can look at you, looking at me. If I'm out on a date, then I just shut my eyes, then I can see. Get away from the bar, tell your boyfriend, hold your jaw, and dance with me.
I see you glance with me, that's why I'm asking, be. So let's party, be. Come and dance with me. Yo, it goes on and on. I see you get excited like this is my song. You think I wanna get involved, you're not wrong. Cause I've been waiting for this moment all night long. So I creep, creep, creep like to your see. I've got my left eye checking out your scenery. I've got my right eye right where it needs to be. No matter how I look at it, you look good to me. Still, I'm looking for the perfect view. The way I see it, that's right next to you. I know you probably heard it before, but still, I love it when you flex like that for real. So don't stop doing what you do when you do it. I just wanna be a part of it when you do it. Feel like a wally if I don't pursue it, and I can't go through it, so let's
she
get through it.
No pole. Look at those eyes, it's in her eyes, she's good to go. She can satisfy my mind, body, and
come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me, come and dance with me. I see you glance with me, that's why I'm asking, be. So let's party, be. Come and dance with me.
If I'm out on my own, then I can look at you, looking at me. If I'm out on a date, then I just shut my eyes, then I can't see. Away from the bar, tell your boyfriend, hold your jaw, and start
to you
blind
for me. That's why I'm asking, be. So let's party, be. Come and dance with me. I know you didn't come out to stand and stare. You bought new shoes and you did up your hair. You made a real effort tonight, and it shows. I can tell by your face you don't want to be alone, because the mood is right and the time is now. And if you can't do it, I'll show you how. All you gotta do is get loose, let go, just throw a couple shakes, put your skills on show.
Welcome everyone back to the West Prince Sports Review here on Planet FM, and of course we're with the legend, the great man, Grant Nisbet. Of course, we're going to talk about now the times where Nisbo had worked for Sky TV, and of course the rights for getting World Cups was in 1999. They went to TVNZ, and TVNZ got them in 2003. TV3 got them in 2007, but then New Zealand had the opportunity to host it, and that gave Sky and gave Grant an opportunity to call his second World Cup final. Just looking back to those, you must have been so happy to finally call a World Cup in New Zealand, Grant.
Yeah, well, it'd been a long time between drinks, of course, 1987, as you say, then 24 years on before we actually got to host another Rugby World Cup. And I think the feeling around the country was more of a relief than anything when we won the damn thing. But you know, the build-up to the World Cup final was pretty dramatic. You know, we're losing Dan Carter, and then Aaron Cruden got himself injured as well, and we all know what happened in the final with Stephen Donald, etc. But, yeah, look, it was a great tournament. It was really well run. There's no doubt about that. And it was quite fitting, I guess, that once again we played France in the final, as we'd done in 1987. But if you remember back in 2011, when we played them in the pool section, we absolutely thrashed France. And so I think the feeling was that, you know, another game like that, and it really wouldn't be that difficult for the All Blacks to win. But France have this ability, for some reason or other, just to turn up on any given day and play extremely well, and they did on that occasion. And as I say, it was tough. You know, people often say to me, how did you actually get through that game? You know, because people sitting at home were going outside and, you know, spending 10 minutes outside and hoping when they came back in that after maybe a cigarette or a beer or something that things might have changed a wee. But you do. You get through because it's the job you're doing. I had Grant Fox and Ian Smith with me, and Foxy is a very passionate All Black. Obviously, he was an All Black himself and a fine All Black. And he found it a bit tough at one stage. He had to have a toilet stop. And I remember Ian Smith saying to me after the game, he said, I looked up in the commentary position and there was only one head there. And he sort of did a little bit of a panic. He wondered what happened to old Foxy. But somehow we got through it, and it was dramatic at the end. It was dramatic right through, wasn't it, when you include the Stephen Donald thing, which happened a long way from the end of the game, and then there was no scoring whatsoever, and then the All Blacks had to kill time for the last 2 minutes or so. And as I say, rather than euphoria, I think it was relief when the final whistle finally blew.
It certainly was, and of course that French side, you know, it was that unpredictability of the French. They'd lost two pool games, and of course everyone had written them off, and of course they won in what would have been considered a very tight semi-finals against the 14-man Welsh side. So that really, and of course that World Cup, it was a special moment, and I remember speaking to you previously on it, and I remember what you said, wow, what a match it was. But getting back, but between those eras, Graham Henry had stepped down, Steve Hansen had taken over. You had the pleasure of calling the All Blacks' undefeated season, which was 2013, which was the first time in the professional era an international team had gone through undefeated. And then we move on to 2015. Sky had won the rights, along with Prime, to cover the Rugby World Cup in England. And, you know, it must have been great to just be going overseas and just to cover these great moments, because the All Blacks, while they may have been favourites, there were still some doubts heading into that World Cup.
Yeah, of course there were. And you know, we hadn't won a World Cup away from home. We'd won it in 87 and 2011 at home, but we'd never managed to win it. In fact, we'd had some monumental cock-ups at World Cups in the past, when you think back to 91, 95, 99, 2003, even 2007. You know, everybody can remember little incidents from all of those tournaments where the All Blacks just couldn't nail it. So there was, I guess, a fair bit of anxiety around in 2015 that things weren't going to go well, even though we appeared to have the best team. But it was a great achievement, really. I mean, it wasn't easy. I remember that match against South Africa in the wet, I think at Twickenham. It must have been Twickenham, because if it had been Cardiff, then it wouldn't have been that wet, because they would put the roof over the top. But, you know, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy at all. And even when you think back to the final against the Wallabies, we were sailing along quite happily. Then Ben Smith got a yellow card, and back came the Wallabies. And they were really within striking distance, but then we were good enough to nail it at the end. And certainly a major highlight to win at Twickenham, which is a great rugby ground. I mean, we all laugh at the Poms a wee bit from time to time and say how stodgy their rugby is, and, you know, their crowds are hard to please, et cetera, et cetera. But to be playing at Twickenham, which is regarded by many as the home of rugby, was just a fantastic occasion. And it was a great game of rugby, and the All Blacks got home in the finish, and I think everybody acknowledged that they were the best team in the world at that stage.
Yeah, they certainly were. And, of course, that was a fantastically led campaign by Steve Hansen and Richie McCaw. And, of course, I think this story was Dan Carter and those drop kicks in the semis and in the finals. But, you know, I believe we were so lucky to have that team was a very, very special team, especially with those two great players, Grant.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I mean, they are two All Black legends. There's no doubt about that. I think even, you know, for 50 or 100 years from now, people will still be talking about Dan Carter and Richie McCaw as great All Blacks. And they were coming towards the end of their career, that's for sure. And, in fact, Richie didn't play on after that. He announced his retirement after the World Cup in 2015. Dan Carter had his real issues around World Cups. He'd been injured a lot. And we all know what happened in 2011 when he damaged himself practicing goal kicking and all the rest of it. So it meant a heck of a lot to him to be around and able to play in 2015. And he was huge. He really was. And those drop kicks, they came out of nowhere, really. And they were vital at the time, for sure.
They certainly were. And while commentating, the last few years were pretty difficult for you on a personal level. December the 4th, 2015, your wife for many, many years, Tony, lost her battle with cancer. And, of course, while doing what you do, your job, you must have had a lot of this must have been in the back of your mind.
Yeah, particularly in the 2015 World Cup because, she wasn't all that well when I left. And subsequently passed away after I got home after about a month for sure. But she was an absolute rock. She came from a sporting family. Her old man played for Manawatu. She had a brother who played bowls for New Zealand. She understood the sacrifices. And you're not around a lot when you're covering rugby. Some of those tours go on and on and on. I remember 1989 tour. When I actually covered both the All Blacks and the Rugby League, Keith Quinn did the All Blacks and I shot backwards and forwards doing Kiwi Rugby League tour in 1989. I was actually away for 13 weeks. Now, that's a quarter of the year, and that's a long time, for a mother to be looking after kids back in New Zealand. So, look, she did a sterling job for sure.
Yep, she sounds like she was a very, very special lady, Grant.
Absolutely, yep, absolutely.
Anyway, so on that note, we'll just go to put some music on. And next month, we're gonna talk the final part. We're going to talk about Nisbo the guy. Welcome everyone back. So we're at the final part of the show, and I'm just going to do quick fire with our legend Grant Nisbet. But first of all, what makes you tick, Grant?
What makes me tick? Gee, that's a question I've never been asked before, Eamon. What makes me tick? I think the fact that we live in New Zealand is a big plus, and we all know that through COVID, don't we?
Mm.
But you know, I'm a sporting buff. I follow all sports, to be perfectly honest. A lot of people say if you follow rugby, then by definition you don't like to follow rugby league. I follow every damn thing. So, you know, I'd say, you know, in a word, probably sport and family make me tick.
And, of course, then we talk about quickfire. What have been the special moments that sort of broadcasting that meant a lot to you? Obviously, the birth of your daughters, your marriage to Tony.
Yep, they're the ones, yes, for sure, absolutely. I mean, you know, I well remember being present at both births, and, yeah, it's the sort of thing that never happened when my father was around, but being able to be there at the time is just fantastic, there's no doubt about that.
It certainly is, and, of course, then of course, we come to this now. I feel really bad asking you, and you don't have to answer that, but you must have a due date when the great Nisbo is finally going to hang up the cans, as they say. And of course, what a great moment to finish off, which has been a brilliant career, would be watching the All Blacks win in a World Cup final. Would that be a great way to sign off for you when you finally make that decision?
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes these decisions are made for you, they're not made by you.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I imagine Sky will have the final say. But that sounds like a beauty, that one. You know, I think an All Black win in France would be really hard to achieve. But boy, if they could do it, wouldn't that be great?
Oh, well, yeah, and I think, well, there has been changes made to the All Blacks. And, of course, one of the things is, do you still like your KFC, Grant?
I do. Yeah, I do. I sometimes regret once I've had it, but nevertheless, of course I do. Yeah, absolutely. It's not like once a week or anything, though.
Are you sure? Because the rumour is, I heard from many people when I was doing my research for the show, that you have been seen within KFC drive-thru. Just in wrapping up, how do you think history will judge you, and how would you describe Grant Nisbet as Nisbo the bloke? Just a How would you want people to think of you? Let's say you go to the big broadcasting booth in the sky. How would you like people to judge you, Nisbo?
Well, I think people, I mean, it's very hard to make a judgment on yourself, but I think people see me as very laid back. I don't get angry very often. In fact, rarely do I get angry. I think as a commentator, it's very important to be impartial, and I think I've managed to achieve that over the years. Look, I've... Like anybody, I sit down and watch a game of rugby. I want A to beat B. And when you're sitting in the commentary box, you really can't afford to have that attitude, because it shines through very quickly. And I've listened to commentaries over the years from very many commentators, nameless, of course. And I know straight away how they're affected by the result of the game. And I've never bought into that at all. I think you need to pay due respect to the opposition, whoever they are, because you know when you're sitting at home, or you know when you're sitting in the commentary box, there are people who want the team. Let's say we're playing France. There are plenty of Frenchmen watching the game who want France to win, and they don't want some biased clown from New Zealand trying to portray a picture of the great All Black team. So, look, I think you have to remain impartial. And I think I've managed to achieve that largely over the years.
And I have to say that your commentaries over the years have been brilliant. You've been a voice of a generation, and I feel pretty honoured and quite humbled to be speaking to you, Grant. Thank you so much for your time today. Your contribution to this show today has been fantastic, and all the best for 2022.
Yeah, look, same to you, Eamon, and the listeners. I've really enjoyed recounting, which a career which has gone on and on and on and on forever, it would seem. But I still have pretty good recall, I think, of things that have happened in the past. And let's hope there are a few more to come.
Thank you very much. Have a great day, Grant.
If you are